They call me the composer. Okay, so I'm here to introduce Amy Ryo Parks. So, when engaging in the modern-day voyeurism that is Googling, you'll find that Amy Ryo Parks, if she hasn't paid to be optimized for internet searches, is clearly optimized for internet searches. After scrolling past the links to her author photos, Facebook and LinkedIn profiles, necessities in this modern era, you'll find, you will find links to her features in Barrow Street, Elephant Journal, and amyrattoparks.com. But also, Amy has been featured in publications recentish, as she has said, including Reed Magazine, The Exam into Life, a literary journal of the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, Muse and Stone, Permafrost, Mississippi Review, South Dakota Review, and Court Green. But who is Amy Ryo Parks, besides a burgeoning internet celebrity? Though she is usually recognized as a professor of composition and writing at the University of Montana, I have gotten to know Amy through her role as Wrangler of Nervous RIT 101 TAs. Granted, I have provided plenty of this nervous to this title, but truly, Amy is a wonderful instructor and mentor who, aside from writing poetry, publishing checkbooks, including Bread and Water Body, winner of the 2004 Miriam Frontier Award, and running her own creative project called A Family, invests seemingly limitless amounts of energy into her writing and teaching, students and teaching. Personal anecdote, and this is written in boldface. During the final 2 weeks of the previous semester, I encountered an issue of one of my students, the details being unnecessary. I emailed various members of the composition faculty seeking guidance, and yes, everyone was very helpful in meeting with me, offering advice. I recall, though, wondering how much time Amy spent composing the electronic essay with which she replied to me. To call it an email would not do it justice to the amount of time and thought she put into responding my barrage of questions. But even after composing the at least one-page single-space email, she still volunteered time for me to meet with her, during which we talked for an hour and a half, allowing me to be wholly honest because she knew I needed to drop diplomacy for a moment, for lack of a better term. And she was as honest, reciprocating, and allowing whatever to be said, knowing all the situation was just a flustered TA trying to sort things out. Amy wasn't just my higher-up or boss or what have you, but a listening, honest, breathing human, which is big for me because I have a tendency to put people on pedestals. Anyway. To me, this is Amy's poetry. Curious, open, always attentive and listening. Each poem unfolds, contemplating, ranging from the expansive machine of the prairie to the tightness of the canary's birdcage. Amy's poetry compels you to, quote, bring it so close to your face that it becomes the entire size of your vision. She questions the idea of origins, of the natural and created worlds. But these visceral worlds, worlds full of buffalo, bees, butterflies, and beetles, are as ghostly as they are populated, showing houses reduced to singular objects, to bare sound, as if there's nothing whole or safe in these realms, or even determinal. She asks, even in sleep, you throw your arms out before you. In defense, protection, it looks the same. Yet this is not a scary world. It is a world that demands attention, to listen, to watch, and interrogate. It is a world not to back away from, but to discern with increasing care. Everyone, please welcome Amy Ryo Parks.
Actually, to hear your introduction. What I was going to say was be all entertaining and funny, I guess, but I really was very touched by what you said. Now I can't be funny. I was funny over there by the bar a few minutes ago. Those standing there can witness. Thank you, John. Thank you, Mary, for the awesome story. In fact, while I was listening, I was thinking, oh, so glad I picked some of the poems I picked because they begin with kind of dystopia, and that'll be great. I wish I could say we planned it that way. And thanks to BJ and Beth for organizing this, getting it all together. Can you guys hear me? Am I close enough? Okay. So what I'm going to read are a selection of poems, and forgive me, I'm not texting. I'm making sure I don't read for too long. Actually, it would be funny to... Thanks for a minute. I'm going to read a series of poems from a new manuscript I'm working on, and I'm happy to say that I'm reading a bunch of new poems. The beginning are not so new, but after, you know, about halfway through, there are some newer poems, which is kind of fun to read. You know, you guys go to workshop and have very new vulnerable poems. So these, you know, back half are some very new vulnerable poems. This manuscript is a lot about the idea of the ideas of shelter and exposure, and how physically but also emotionally, what we do to shelter ourselves emotionally and what that feels like to be exposed, some of those big questions. This first poem, and they're all songs, so each title is a song title, at least for now. Song for the architecture that endures beyond our sorrow. Wooden eaves and narrow gables hollow above the cloistered silence of cupboards, the cellar door which opens with the sound of a wounded thing. Breakfast in the louvered light, oblique across the table in the echo of whatever has left or was taken, whatever might return or be returned. You sit in the wooden chair to witness. If they must, things can always continue without us. The doorframe would uphold its proper angle. At the window, you study the casing, the sash. You notice the molding and remember that it used to remind you of something. One night, you walk the stairs, the length of the hall, and stop beside the room that once was otherwise. You pull a drawer open, hold the green glass knob for a moment long, feel the cool indifference. You remove the belongings, set them neatly on the warped wood floor, and push the drawer back into place, away from you, empty. Song for the Boulevard Before Dawn. Colony of likeness, I think, or rows of hives, of wings folded delicately beneath them in sleep. I could love them this way, as industrious creatures, simple. Tuesday, drag the trash to the curb. Thursday, leave for choir. Saturday, walk slowly through the house in wide cloth slippers. But every night's the same, the yawn, the laying down, the closed eyes. And every morning the same, the sitting up, the yawn, the opening eyes, then the eruption of limbs, the hurtling toward day. The pupils dilate as though there was danger. Lord knows what might eat them. I want to shepherd them into this box, punch holes in the lid, and say, at ease, at ease. Here is your light, your air. Pinhole gods surround you in yellow columns, white. Here is a bed, a mug of water, a little plate of food. I would study my tiny diorama. I would pretend I wasn't watching. Song of Weights and Measures. I am awake enough to go walking, but I won't. Instead, I will sit, a complicit traveler, clicking forward along my axis across night, across day, like boxcars, 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 lurching under the orange lights through the rail yard, and I will drag my wagon of goods behind me, tied by a thick brown cord, and wonder how things ever got to be so heavy. When I left, there were plans in these bags, maps, blueprints of itinerant longing. Now they carry only paper, bound sheaves which are blank and threatening to blow loose, fall as tinder for a fire, or starve hollow-eyed and silent if something doesn't happen soon. I set this knowledge down next to my teacup and study its elasticity, try to determine whether it's tender seed or hardy spore. Can it live in these conditions? I make a plan to feed it milk teeth and my father's ashes, to nurse it along until I click past, I'm gone. Song of Collision, Escape. The machine of the plane dissembles sagebrush by rabbit, brush fire by buffalo, and the rusted frame of a thing we might drive has become habitat, a livable space where something stretches as it wakes. Throats rise and call, and there is more, more here than less. Less the ground a place to stand, more a mouth about to open. Confessions fill up like cavities or curb signs or traffic patterns, electric yellow tape against electric blue fracture of sky, and the buffalo pass like currency. Axiom of what is left. Fall the burning barn before you leave. Song for the unexpected darkness, intermittent light. The flare screams away from your hands. Pink static sizzles through the blue-black night and lights the colorless flatland, silhouettes of cacti and the car showered in light, brief and bright. The sparks float pink-orange through the voluminous dark, and when the car is lit, its emptiness echoes like a flashbulb, pops, diffuses, leaves things darker than the original darkness. You stand a careful distance, far enough away to be safe, far enough to properly see the car's boxy utility, its age. Pace if you want and consider the options. Talk aloud to yourself, though your voice will feel small. Or better, shift your weight from one foot to the other, right, left, like walking without walking. Move, but don't advance. Or better, just stand, braced in the palpable nothing. No one even knows you are here. You could wait for another car to come, headlights bumping clumsily through the darkness, and ride along toward the pearl earrings and iron napkins of a different life. You could walk into the folds of the somnolent hills and let your hair grow into the cracked earth. You could sit down in the night and do nothing but feel the night. All of this is faith. Here is where someone might kneel. Here is where someone might pray. So coming into some of these last ones, these are all relatively new poems. In this poem, the last line, bright cargo of stones, there's a phrase, private as a cargo of stones, from Maxine Hung Park's awesome book called Engine Empire. You guys should read that book. It's really good. Song for the blooming yellow bells of promise. In the hull of the dark ship, a canary sits on her perch. She is not exceptional as far as canaries go. She is soft-feathered, and her eyes, though small, are expectant. She quietly preens in the mornings, then works her small feet back and forth across the wooden bar while the solemn weight of the ship lurches forward over ice and gray rocks, the black depths of blue water. Once she sang, but the echo too eagerly returned in the cavernous space beyond her brass cage, and she began to know. Soon after, when sitting very still, she felt the ground slide out to one side, then rock back. She saw the seed shells and her molted feathers swarm to one side as though they had been blown, and she felt her body echo their motion. Something great had touched her, and she came to believe she was a secret kept by someone. Perhaps she would be retrieved, a deposit left safe and out of sight, private as a cargo of bright stones. This poem, it comes from this is the poem I'm most nervous about reading to you, so I've carefully embedded it not at the beginning or end. So I often feel this sense of intense anxiety about the fact that I love my husband dearly and have been married to him for an eternity, and been with him since I was like 19, and yet I cannot write poems in any way, like, about our relationship or about anything like that. So because I was becoming kind of debilitatingly focused on this, I attempted to write a poem about the reason that I cannot write a poem about that. So you guys can tell me what you think later. It's called Song for Failure. So followed by For Love. So, yeah, we'll see. He was flattered, so that's all that matters, right? After all the poems I've written, he's never even asked. I was like, don't you wonder why I don't write poems about you? He's like, oh yeah, but if I asked, I'd be a jerk. And I was like, that's true, you're so smart. See, that could go on the list, right? Okay. A song for failure, for love. I cannot name this. Cannot unfurl the character's black arcs and bellows or translate the gestures into phonemes. It is the echo, the periphery, the wholly known, the recognized. cannot pin it to a board alongside the bees, butterflies, beetles, cannot find its proper Latin name. I can call it elemental, bone light, quarry deep, clear and refracting myself into more of myself. Cannot dissect it on the table with scalpel and hemostat or hold it broken open in my hand. It is cell by cell, sphere perfect, mercurial, whole, open but never broken. Cannot watch it through terrarium walls. All the scopes and lenses draw close and fail. But the roots are strong, I know this. The waxy leaves unfurl like an offering, an invitation. Cannot predict it using scriptures or runes or cards. Cannot calculate the odds or measure the probable outcomes. It finds the thinnest sliver of me that binds itself fist tight. It enters the darkness and calls light, light, light. Song for the buoyant thistle body. Actually, I think I don't want to read that one yet. Sure, I'll read that one. Okay, since I'm giving little introductions now, this is my attempt to do, in my opinion, the hardest thing ever, which is to write a poem about feeling happy. It's about maybe the hardest thing. So this is my try at it. Because it came from actually being happy, so I felt like it was authentic. All right. It's bad to just try to write a poem about being happy. Anyway, song for the buoyant thistle body. Hold fast, hold fast. In the bright dome of the forest, the path ascends slowly out of the morning fog. Somewhere behind you, there are houses nearby with newspapers on the stoop and shapely topiary gardens in the yard. But here, the canopy's yellow gold burns into you. The red brush lions against your shins, and you nearly run ahead around the bend because you sense it so close, the thing you have been trying to find. It draws back from the smoky edge of memory, flickers in a bright shadow like red fruit behind red leaves, but is nothing you can hold in your hand. It is not riddle or cone. You know this in your bones, your drowsy child's mind, the body swollen with assaults of joy. The heart's crowded aviary crashes its fine cage. The skin, each pore a buzzing apiary, lifts. The buoyant thistle body blooms. Keep walking. Find the last place where you knew something for sure and wait to be gathered back up inside the warm, brooding wing of the lost familiar. The sky cracks ever open. Remember, there is always more you to you than you. Wash in the day's wide basin of happiness. There's just three more here. Song for pink bloom and passerine. This is burning season. A waxwing flies over hibiscus and peony, over sludge pit, cow shit latrine, over barbed wire and slash pile. You should ignite the green wreckage, the overgrown promise, seed head, and cabbage flowers. Burn it now before the season comes on, before you fall asleep to dreams of lightning flash fires, a whip finish for the pasture that always runs towards some golden tragic sanctuary. Even in sleep, you throw your arms out before you. In defense, protection, it looks the same. All that spring green gone brown and released to the blaze by black, black, black. What can you burn now to stave off the sudden brush fire? Birdsong rises up from the sage field and something hovers far above, silent before the buckling, sharp descent. Melancholy rapture. Finch, swallow, martin, a tight meal of driftwood bones and bright feathers. The lung's last breath, the long-held bone air releases through the salvia bloom, settles in the lupin. The rest will ashen, so hold it close. This is bohemian light, sweet passerine. With crow heart, with raven eye, enter the bright wreckage. Steal away the small lockets and thin bowstrings of pleasure. Give me your hand. Song of proper study. Consider the quiver of stones in your pocket, each one saved for the slingshot. Roll them in your palm like lead musket or buckshot. Hold one between your fingers and study it up by the light as though it was sapphire, emerald, diamond. Bring it so close to your face that it becomes the entire size of your vision. As a child, you did this until you know only the graniteness of the thing. Hold your fingers near. See the scar from the paring knife, the tiny lines of dry skin, the pores exhaling what you no longer need. Know the stone's black roundness, the curve between your fingers. Soon, you will draw it back in the leather grip and release it to purpose. Don't move a muscle. Don't even blink your eyes. And this is the last one. It's called Song at the End of Night. In the meditation garden, orange blossoms swell the cool air. Fragrance pulses across the lawn. Lemons and avocados hang in blue light dawn, where day will grow between the branches, inevitable day rolling forward, breath by breath. Breath by breath, they sleep inside those walls as we leave, and their chests rise, lift, fall. In the pond, koi slip through dark water, watching as we pass, like shadow, like breeze. Somewhere beyond lies the desert. Somewhere beyond lies the sea. Thank you.